Baker Beer Company founder, Gabriel Magliaro, cancer survivor, Brianna Whelan, and from the WGN Plus podcast, Rebel Force Radio, Jimmy Mack. And now, here's your host, a man who is seriously considering building all of his Christmas gifts by hand, Justin Kaufman.
Who would like a stool? I think I might be able to make a stool. Or like a piece of wood with maybe a little hole in it. Something like that. What can I say? I'm a toy maker. Just like I should rename myself Giuseppe. Giuseppe Kaufman. Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman here on WGN till 11 o'clock tonight. Got a great show to kick off the week. Little news, sports, culture, and a ton of Star Wars. Coming up tonight, Jimmy Mack from Rebel Force Radio is going to be in studio to talk about the big world premiere that's happening tonight of Star Wars, The Force Awakens. We're going to talk about the movie, the world around, and what he calls anticipation fatigue, which we just heard Anna talking about. You see it everywhere. I mean, it's amazing how much cross-promotion this film has garnered. I mean, everything. And I guess that's what happens in this day and age when you have a film that has a budget of $600 gazillion. They need to recoup. They should just call this, it's in the week before Star Wars, recoup. The Force Awakens, recoup. We'll talk about it. We'll take your calls as well, 312-981-7200. You want to talk Star Wars? You got a question you've always been afraid to ask your friends? Like, what's a Wookiee? Jimmy Mack can answer that. Or George Lucas, good or bad for the franchise? Oh. Jimmy Mack can answer that. Or Jar Jar Binks versus the Ewoks. Funny how time kind of makes that one. Ewoks are cool. Jar Jar Binks is not. And we'll let Jimmy Mack will be the one to answer that. He'll be here coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. Also coming up tonight, we'll talk with Brianna Whelan. She's the subject of the documentary called My Quarter Life Cancer. It was produced by Touch Vision and tells the story of Whelan's diagnosis and recovery from Hodgkin's lymphoma at the age of 25 years old. It's an amazing piece, and we're going to talk with Brianna and the producers from that documentary. And my guest tonight at the big table, Gabriel Magliaro. He's the founder of Half Acre Beer Company here in Chicago, which just expanded to their second location. Half Acre's been at the forefront of the craft beer movement here with beers like Daisy Cutter and Pony Pills. We'll talk with Gabriel about the company's growth and also about resurrecting beer culture here in Chicago. And the Chicago Bears played themselves out of the playoff picture yesterday by losing their sixth home game of the year. 5-8, guys. 5-8. I guess they are who we thought they were going to be, to quote Denny Green there. So what's next? Well, Adam Hogue's going to break down the storylines and pitch us on why we should pay attention for the rest of the season. Two words, Kevin White. And they said, I just heard Connor saying that they're not even sure Kevin White's going to come back. So we're going to have to see what, I mean, they're making it really hard for us to watch the last couple games for the Chicago Bears. But we'll see. We'll talk with Adam about that. And this weekend was T-Box 2015. Minor infractions from around the 12 bars of Christmas pub crawl in Wrigleyville. The Downloads Entertainment correspondent was there, and she will stop by to give us the inside scoop. Let's just hope she's not still drunk. Huh? News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Eric Sullivan, and production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this here is The Download. All right. Well, let's get to it. Let's start the show like we start every show with the Carry Out. It's our nightly segment where I read the newspaper, so you at home, you don't have to. Today's top story. Chicago Police Commander Glenn Evans was acquitted today over abuse charges. He was accused of shoving a gun in a man's mouth to get him to confess. Even though there is DNA evidence on the gun, the judge said that just proves that Commander Evans had been there. And she said the victim's story was inconsistent. The defense lawyers disagree, as they are paid to do. But one thing came from the case. Commander Evans has 45 excessive abuse allegations during the 20-year period, most in the entire police department. No punishment, of course, because that would be un-Chicago-like. But the police say that shooting and overall crime were way down in the district he was in charge of. So, put two and two together. Maybe excessive force means less crime. Yikes. Now it moves to a civil lawsuit where the victim will probably win hundreds of thousands of dollars. Ah. The justice system.
The Chicago Teachers Union announced today that results are in and members voted overwhelmingly for singer Jeffrey Austin. Oh, sorry, wait, no. I thought they were voting for the Voice finale tonight. No, they voted to strike. Sorry about that. They voted to strike. Come on, he's from St. Charles. The AP investigated peeled shrimp and found that it's peeled by slaves in Thailand. Great. So not only do we have to worry about how the shrimps are farmed, don't Google it, now huge human rights violations for when they're peeled? You know what? That's it. I'm going to make a public statement here. I'm done with shrimp. I am completely done with it. It is that unacceptable. From here on out for me, it is only domestic chicken. That's it. Nothing wrong with that, right? Right? Chance the Rapper was the first independent artist in history to perform on Saturday Night Live. Wow, that's an amazing stat. He also freestyled a bit and mentioned police officer Jason Van Dyke. Didn't really make a political statement, just said Jason Van Dyke. All in a day's work for Chance. Hey, any way that he might be able to play for the White Sox, he's doing more for the Southsiders by wearing that hat than anyone who's actually playing on the field. Just a thought. Like maybe there's a promotion in there. Amazon has stopped selling hoverboards, a two-wheeled foot Segway that has been taking the toy world by storm, or the annoying me everywhere I go by storm lately. The hoverboard is set to be the big Christmas gift this year, but Amazon said they won't sell them until their safety can be verified, so they could be sold alongside the perfectly safe toys like skateboards or Nerf guns, slip and slides, or super soakers filled with bleach. That's a thing, I think. Pete, fact check? No? In weather, this weekend was gross/awesome. I mean, awesome to be 60 degrees. Terrible for it to be raining nonstop for 2 days. Well, it's nice now, though, right? I mean, but it is cold. I mean, it's 45. That's so cold. Stop being so cold. I want 60 back. In sports, the Bears lost again, a close one. They're all close ones. And they fell to 5-8. And officially, unofficially, eliminated from the playoffs. Robbie Gould missed another field goal at the end of the game to lose it. But did he lose it? Yeah, it'd be nice to be 6-7. But let's talk real. Can we close the door for a second? Let's close the door. This team wasn't going to win a Super Bowl. And if they got in, they'd be dismantled so quick. Imagine a playoff game against Seattle. I think Robbie may be taking a fall for the team. At 5-8, I mean, we're looking at a top 10 pick. And frankly, we need a top 10 pick. I don't know what the landscape is, but a top 10 first round quarterback? Be nice, right? And at that point, we'd be saying, thank you, Robbie. Right? Okay, you can open the door. Also, in the last 10 games, the Bears are 1-9 at home. Think about how much this organization has charged you for seats, for beer, for pretzels, for foam fingers, only to ultimately rip you off. Think about that. The Cubs are the talk of the MLB right now, and owner Tom Ricketts said going after Hayward and Lackey was plan A for the Cubs this offseason. Now comes word there still may be a trade in theory with Tampa Bay, who has some young starting pitching, and the Cubs could make some room by sending one of their young bats like Baez or Soler. So pay attention. Would be nice to have Matt Moore as your number four starter, huh? It's like fantasy baseball. I take that in a heartbeat. Derrick Rose and the Bulls are in Philly tonight to face the 1-24 Sixers. 1-24. Their only victory against Kobe Bryant. Wow. And tomorrow, the Blackhawks get the Avalanche. Patrick Kane pushed his scoring streak to 26 straight games. That's crazy. And you know what's even crazier? He needs 26 more to break Wayne Gretzky's record. Oh, wow. In college basketball, don't look now, but the Northwestern Wildcats have started the season 8-1. They're one loss to North Carolina. You figure there's about 30 games in a season, so you got to win at least 20 to get into the tournament. Hey, this could be the year the Wildcats go to the big dance. It's early, and I know every team in the Big Ten is great, but watch this. Watch closely. And finally, it's only 4 days until The Force Awakens, starting a new era for the Star Wars franchise and bringing it to a close, the golden age of hating prequels. This week, a law blog called Legal Geeks took on the case on whether Han Solo was legally allowed to shoot first in the cantina showdown with the bounty hunter Greedo, a scene later changed by George Lucas in the special edition to make Han Solo shoot second in defense. The legal scholar said that Greedo posed enough of a threat for Han Solo to act in self-defense. No word on whether the Greedo protesters are going to block Lakeshore Drive. Oh, that's terrible. That's terrible. Come on, Justin. Come on. I'm sorry. That's terrible. I wonder if there's a hashtag, Greedo's Life Matters. Come on. That's awful. Get it together. That's the carryout for December 14, 2015. Hey, if you order two orders of onion rings, we'll give you the Chewbacca spork for free. Just getting in the Star Wars spirit.
More to come tonight. Adam Hoag's going to join us to talk Bears and recapping T-Box, the 12 Bards of Christmas. Our entertainment correspondent was there, and she'll give us an inside look. It's a download here on WGN. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the Bears lost again yesterday, 24-21, to the Washington Redskins for the sixth loss at home. Adam Hoag covers the Bears for WGN Radio and WGNRadio.com joins me now. Adam, tough one to swallow. The last 2 weeks have been games where we knew the Bears would play close, but they just don't have that killer instinct.
Yeah, Justin, I mean, that's a good way to put it, because this team has not lost a game that they weren't in late since week three in Seattle. That kind of capped off those first 3 weeks when they were 0-3. But, you know, this has really been a different team since, a competitive team, but a team that's clearly not great. Clearly at least a year away from kind of learning how to win, kind of learning how to get all those details down. It just seems like every single game there's a penalty here or a misfire here or just something very minor, or just the last couple weeks a field goal that goes the wrong way. But throughout the course of a game, things add up and it puts you in a tough spot late. And, you know, I think the Bears have taken a step forward this year, but obviously, you know, you can, as much as you want to look at these games and say, oh, they're right there, they're only, you know, they could easily be, you know, have 9 wins at this point. Yeah, technically that's true, but at the same time, I mean, you look at some of the talent deficiencies, some of the mistakes, they need to go through another offseason of kind of retooling this roster, and maybe next year they'll be able to win these kinds of games.
Well, it's interesting, too, because they started the game, and they did this in Green Bay, too. They started the game just sloppy. I mean, they let this time it was on the defense, where they let the Redskins just pretty much go up and down the field. It was 14-0 before we knew it. But it seemed at halftime, or even going into the half, the Bears adjusted and made it a game.
Yeah, and there were some adjustments made. And I think that, you know, especially on the defensive side of the football, you look at the coaching, and really that's been the upgrade. I mean, I can't look at any one position or any one player and say that, oh, this guy's really made a difference this year and the talent is overall better. I mean, I think Pernell McPhee was showing that for a while this year, but he's been banged up and hurt and not been able to play full games. And, you know, maybe you look at Eddie Goldman, the second-round draft pick in the middle of that defensive line, and Adrian Amos, the fifth-round safety. But those, I don't know that those guys have been consistent all along. So the point is that I really think it's the coaching that has allowed this defense to at least be respectable and give the offense a chance to win football games. But still, every single game, I think you can point at deficiencies in that unit and say, hey, this needs to be upgraded.
You know,
I think really in the last few weeks, we've seen that with the inside linebacker.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the defense, I feel like every game, and this is something that even the Lovie Smith defense has had trouble closing games out in the fourth quarter. I remember Brian Urlacher and Lance Briggs and Julius Peppers and all those guys giving up that long drive with about 4 minutes to go in the fourth quarter to seal the deal on a Bears loss. This defense, surprisingly to me, and this might be coaching, you tell me, seems to always get the ball back to its offense for the end of the game, which, you know, almost in each situation that's happened.
Yeah, no, you're right. They have. And that's an important thing to be able to do. And you know what? You can argue that the offense has even, at least late in the game, put the, you know, been in a position to win the last 2 weeks. They've handed Robbie Gould a field goal opportunity. You know, last week, I think against 49ers, you got to make that one. It's a chip shot. This was a little different. I think you can blame the offense a little bit for not getting closer.
Right.
Really the last three plays after that, once they had that big long throw to Alshon Jeffrey and they got into field goal range, you're looking for a little bit more than 3 yards on a first down run and then two incompletions.
And I want to ask you about that, Adam. Is watching that, is that something that is drawn up by the coaches? Because the final two plays were deep passes. I mean, they almost seemed like they were head-scratchers in the way that they were getting down to the 10-5-yard line. Or is that adjustments on the field by the quarterback, Jay Cutler?
Yeah, that's a good question. Sometimes we don't know the answer because Jay does have the freedom at the line of scrimmage to adjust. I think they were both passes, called passes, and I think that on second down you're trying to catch the Redskins napping a little bit because, you know, they know the situation and they know that Robbie Gould's a good kicker, and you're probably at that point just trying to make sure you're in a comfortable field goal range. And so, you know, if you can take a shot with Alshon Jeffery, you go for it. And quite frankly, even though Alshon was double covered, you had the safety come over the top. If he throws that ball better, that's a touchdown. The game is probably over. The Bears have the lead. And Jay underthrew that ball. And it was just barely underthrown enough that Alshon couldn't make the big-time play that they oftentimes does. And actually, Jay's, fortunately, it wasn't intercepted. What happened on third down? You know, I think Jay kind of panicked a little bit. Zach Miller didn't hold his block all that great. He didn't quite give it up completely, but the pocket was starting to collapse, and Jay never realized that Alshon actually had one-on-one coverage on the left side. Yeah. He was looking to the right side the whole time, and that throw to Eddie Royal was just never going to be completed.
Well, you know, watching the game, it's hard not to be a GM because you're looking at it going, okay, as you move forward now, the Bears are out of contention unofficially, but they're out. What are we looking for? I mean, are we looking for replacement? Are we looking for the kind of what we've been arguing all season long about Jeremy Langford instead of Matt Forte, you know, Zach Miller instead of Martellus Bennett? Like, what should we be looking at as fans moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, there's a really long list of things, and you kind of go through the typical off-season checklist, and there's a time for each area of the team that you're going to address, and you know what's first that I'll start with is the coaching staff. You know, the best job that Ryan Pace did from day one when he came in as general manager was to hire the coaches that got hired. And, you know, it sort of all fell together with John Fox losing in the playoffs right away and suddenly being available on Monday and being hired by Friday. It all just sort of came together. And from that point on, you had the credibility of John Fox to help you go out and get assistants like Adam Gase and Vic Fangio. But it goes beyond that in the coaching staff. Even the position coaches have worked out pretty well. And so I think for this team, number one priority is to retain these guys. I don't know if you're going to retain Adam Gase. He's probably going to be out there looking at some head coaching jobs. He nearly got the 49ers job last year. And Vic Fangio might be a little bit more realistic to keep around.
That would be good.
I would start there, and they're going to have to start there because Black Monday is only 3 weeks away. And then you can start diving into the roster. But I think overall, in terms of roster, real quickly, just do what they did last year, which was really kind of just address each position as the best players available became available. And that applies in free agency and the draft. And it just kind of went one by one, and then they addressed the next thing. And overall, I think there were some improvements.
Well, Adam, we got to get you in here now. I mean, as the season starts to wrap up, you got to come in. We'll take some calls. We'll spend a good amount of time going through every single player on the 53-man roster.
Yeah. I can do it. I can do it.
I would love for you to do it. All right, Adam Hoge covers the Bears for WGN Radio, WGNRadio.com. You can check out his recap of yesterday's game. Adam, thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks, Justin. Talk soon.
I just want a bit part in your life. I just want a bit part in your life.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, you know, this is the holiday season, so therefore it means holiday parties. That's right, a lot going on this week. And we thought we would put a correspondent on it. The Download's entertainment reporter is here, also known as Drunk Cubs Fan, Colleen Henneman. Colleen, good to see you.
Hey, how are you? Is this T-Box 2012?
No, it is 2015, and it's a radio station.
Oh.
Well, I mean, everybody knows. Does everybody? I think everybody knows what T-Box is.
Everybody knows what T-Box is. If you don't know what T-Box is, you must be living under Iraq.
But under a rock.
Okay. Yeah. Well, excuse me, Colonel Sanders. T-Bax is that thing. It's like 12 bars of Christmas, and it's on a Saturday, and you set your alarm for like way earlier than you ever would to go to work. And then you go to 12 bars in one day, and you drink money for poor people, all while wearing like hilarious, ironic Christmas sweaters like this one.
It just looks like a plain white shirt.
Right. Oh, yeah. You know what? Because it used to have candy canes all over it. And if, like, I went up to you and I'm like, you're on my naughty list, then you got to suck for a buck and you got to, like, eat a candy cane off of me.
Okay. Well.
Hey, do you know how people get hepatitis C? How's that happen?
A similar situation. I'm not sure. I'm not a doctor. So what was great about T-Box for you? What was the...
Well, first of all, with my candy cane stunt, I made a ton of money. Hold on. I'm going to count it all right here.
Okay. You don't have to do that.
Hold on. Oh, man. This is a Taco Bell. I remember I took all that money and I bought 26 Taco Rancho's Locos. And then, remember this song? Boop, 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 boop. Yeah. Boop, 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 boop. Yeah. It sounded like a telephone was ringing in the background.
Yeah.
I was constantly like, someone's calling me. And I was like, no, it's that Usher song.
I do remember that.
Yeah.
It's like 10 years old. That's
I know, man. But it's a classic hit. Yeah. Your phone is not ringing. It's an Usher song.
Let's talk about any other holiday stuff. I mean, it wasn't just T-Box. I mean, you did other stuff, didn't you?
Well, first of all, you do not know. I could be doing Hanukkah. You don't know me, Jason.
Oh, that's true. You could be doing and that's why I said holiday, yeah.
Yeah. So I just want everyone to be respectful about what everyone, like, wants to be and believe in and stuff and what they want to wear.
Okay.
You can light a bunch of candles or you can light one candle called Christmas tree. Either one is fine by me, you know, because we're all in this together, except, you know, when we're not and we're fighting.
It's
super sad what's going on in the world today. But anyway, I'm going out to my boyfriend, Todd, even though he doesn't allow me to call him that, even though he's on my insurance, which is being dropped in January by Blue Cross Blue Shield. Can we talk about that?
We're not.
They're just going to eradicate all PPOs? I don't think so. You know, it's like the mafia or something. Anyway, Todd's Mima won't let me come out to Mundelein because she doesn't know I exist, quote unquote. So I'm probably just going to go to my dad's condo and hang out with him and his new girlfriend, Monica, and pretend that Monica and I didn't go to high school together.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
So awkward. She's always like, can you bring an app? And I'm like, you're not my mom. Like, don't tell me to bring an app. So I'll probably just bring my guac because everyone loves my guac. I like making it home. It's like super. Everyone's like, Hannah's coming. Bet there's going to be guac there.
Guac.
Yeah. It's super good. Have you ever had my guac?
I have not had your guac.
I should make a guac for you and bring it over here because it is just like, I mash up a bunch of stuff. And everyone's like, Henneman, there's a drought in California. Those avocados, you need to be saving them. I'm like, for who? For someone else to make guac? Because I guarantee someone else is going to make guac out of those avocados. Might as well be me. Nee, 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 nee. Yeah. Mm-mm.
Oh, great.
I've already been tonight to Vines, Irish Oak, Red Ivy, Mullen, Sluggers, Merkle's, Deuces, Murphy's Bleachers.
That all sounds like the same bar.
It's not the same bar. Deuces was established in 2011.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
And Mullen's has a golden tea in it.
Oh, golden teas.
Yeah, it was my first.
Your first time playing?
Yeah, first golden tea I ever had sex on.
Okay. Well, there you go. Colleen Henneman. I'm trying to think because, you know, T-Box was one party, and we talked about that, and it doesn't seem like you went to anything else. And T-Box was also very destructive this year. There were a lot of people up there, a lot of public urination, things like that.
That's going to happen. You know what I mean? There's only so many stalls, and you got 12 bars, and you got a lot of ladies. So it's like you just got to stick with me. Like, people are like, oh, people got arrested for public urination. Talk to me after you've been in Cubs jail 34 times for peeing publicly, okay? Right. It's not a thing. One or two misdemeanors is not going to be, like, a thing for you. So you just have to know where to pee. That's the, like, if you, there's a place behind Yaxi's and nobody, you just go right back there. Nobody cares. And then there's, like, a windowsill in this condo on Cornelia that's been up for sale for, like, 2.5 years. They don't check that. That's fair game. And then if you're, like, going to like Mullins. They got like high tables in the back. You don't even have to squat down. You just stand there and pee. No one notices. I mean, this is like.
Okay.
It's just like, you know, and everybody's like, oh, you know, we're trying to crack down on like illegal activity because all the cops are having their thing right now. So we're going to arrest people for, you know, publicly urinating. Okay. I mean, it's like I get nabbed near Wrigleyville almost never because, as we said, I'm great. And then I pee one time at the Aon Center on a Friday midday. And it's like everybody goes bananas. And I guess it's caught on tape from the Obampan security camera. So now everybody's all upset. I'm like, well, why can't Rahm ignore this video? Ignored all the other ones.
Okay.
It's topical. I'm getting topical.
You're getting very topical. Very mm-hmm. That's what we like about you. The Entertainment Report likes to be topical. That's
well,
good.
I'm here. I live in the city.
Right.
You're going to hear about it.
So beyond just the idea of holiday parties and going to your dad's house,
mm-hmm.
what else? What festivities?
Well, I think it's real important to send like a good card because those are going by the wayside.
Yeah, a holiday card, right?
Because everybody's now like, I'm just gonna send like a pizza emoji over text. That's not a holiday greeting. That's like something that I would send to everybody on a Friday night. So what I'm talking about is like a real thing that you're only gonna send out one time a year. And so everyone's like, oh, I got a piece of real mail. Like, don't do the paperless post thing. Like, actually send a card. So I just did my photo the other day. I'm getting it printed. Where did I drop those off? If this is a Walgreens and you're hearing this and you got my Christmas card, I'll describe it. Call me because I can't remember which one I dropped off at. So this year's super great picture of me. I'm on my couch and I'm eating my favorite lean cuisine. And then I've got both of my pugs, Wrigley and Ville, on either side of me. And they're wearing like these cute little Christmas sweaters with like these antlers on them. I gave them each like half a Benadryl so that I could put them on, the outfits on, because otherwise they would be like, no, thank you. And then we're all sitting there and we're sort of like looking like, I wonder what next year's going to bring. It's so great. It's just like, what a holiday card should be. I want to have a baby so bad.
Okay. There is Colleen Henneman, the Downloads Entertainment reporter, also known as Drunk Cubs fan. Thanks for being here. It's going to be a great holiday, so buck up. It's going to be great.
Okay.
Yeah. And have a great time at your dad's. And
do you know where I can get the Solo Cup refilled?
No. I want a big part in your life. A walk on would be fine. I just want a big part in your life. Welcome back to the Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table runs one of the most successful breweries in Chicago, Half Acre. Half Acre produces beers like Daisy Cutter, Pony Pills, and, of course, Gone Away, which is the Indian Pale Ale. Half Acre has been in existence since 2007. They made their name for themselves on Lincoln Avenue, just north of Irving Park, but just recently added another bigger space on Balmoral. Half Acre continues to grow and is one of the most successful independent breweries in town. Joining me tonight to talk beer and beer culture is Half Acre founder Gabriel Magliaro. Gabriel, thanks for being here.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You didn't go to school for beer. People, I mean, your brewmaster, he
you
goes
can
to
do
school,
that.
He went to school for yeast, right? But you didn't go to school for beer.
I did not, no. I went to the Schuyler Institute here in town, and so I've studied the creative world academically anyway.
How did you get into this business? What drew you to think about starting a brewery?
Well, I've always been involved in the process of making things in general. And I used to, prior to moving to Chicago, I was living in Colorado, and great brewing scene there, certainly an early adapter to craft beer. And I had some exposure to it out there, certainly on the consumer side, but also going inside breweries and, you know, really seeing behind the scenes and guys hanging out, making beer together, making a living, going skiing, you know, a very romantic and attractive world. So certainly that piqued my interest in coming into Chicago at the time. And this is, you know, I got here in 2001, excuse me. And then when we were thinking about doing this, 2006, 2005, it was a very different time in Chicago beer, and it seemed so desperately needed. And
were you surprised? I mean, coming to Chicago and seeing that there wasn't a craft beer scene after coming from Colorado?
Yeah, there was Goose Island, of course, here in the city, and you had Floyd's in Indiana, and Two Brothers out in the burbs, and you had some pubs in town. But relative to the scale of this place, it was virtually no beer. So I was surprised, and I didn't, when thinking more deeply about it, I didn't understand why that was. And I have since found out over the years, exactly why that was. But maybe some of that being naive was an asset for me. Like, well, I'll just give it a spin and try it myself. And
what was the reason why it wasn't here? Was it just because the cost to it, or was there a prohibitive because of the laws, things like that?
All of it. It's just complicated. Certainly in an urban environment, it's expensive to do anything. Making beer is expensive. Real estate is expensive. It wasn't as widely accepted. It was a tough business at that point in time. People weren't thinking about it. The consumption practices were really rooted in what you knew, right? I mean, what kind of beer you drink? I drink Budweiser. So when I go to the store, I get Budweiser. That was very common and understood, and people rallied around their brand. So there wasn't that adventurous spirit behind, at least not nearly right at the level that it is today. So it was, you know, when we started, there were some very rigid conversations when walking into a bar and, have a six-pack of lager bottles at the time, and it would be great if you guys wanted to try this out. And it was like, we don't try things out. It's like we have 10 taps and we have these 10 beers, and that's just the way it is. These are the beers that our consumers drink. So
did you find at the time that Chicago was more traditional in that sense than other towns that you've lived in? Or, I mean, you came from Pennsylvania and the Philadelphia area, but you also lived in Colorado. Was Chicago like, this is how I do it and this is how it will be?
I think so. Yeah, it was certainly very well ingrained what was going on here, and it was certainly a much more distributor driven business at that point in time.
Right.
Very relationship heavy. This, you know, my bar, I work with this distributor and maybe a little bit with that distributor, but we don't really entertain other relationships, and things were just set. People, how they drank beers, that, you know, those ideas were set. How bars served it, what they served, everything was just much more concrete, and change wasn't part of the system. Fast forward to today, and new and different is really at the crux of what makes beer today.
For you guys, I mean, you're a big part of it, but what inspired you to move forward? I mean, knowing all those things about Chicago in 2006 when you're like, okay, let's do this, what inspired you to move forward? Who was doing it, and what got you over the hump?
Well, I don't want to misrepresent at that point, I really didn't know. I mean, today, after all these years and being so ingrained in it, I have a pretty good picture for myself as to what happened, what was going on then, how we got here today.
Not so much then, right?
Yeah, not then. But for me, what has always turned me on about it is really, you know, the process of making something by working with raw materials and by creating something that people are really excited to have. I mean, people love beer. You know, there's people that are deep enthusiasts at this point. Mm-hmm. And there's your casual dad beer drinker that just wants to unwind at the end of the day with beer. Typically, beer is, you know, has a very positive place in people's lives. And since we got involved, that was always something that was very apparent, that people just love beer, and they're very interested in those who make it and the process behind it.
You know, Half Acre is not just about beer. I mean, obviously the what you produce is different, and it has been one of the leading craft beer establishments here in Chicago. But it's also about culture in the sense that it does have a brand to it. It does have a feel that I don't know how to describe it, but it definitely is independent. Is that how much of that goes into making beer, is making the branding and the marketing at the same time unique when starting a brewery?
I think it's they are partners. You have to make great beer and be passionate about the process and the liquid that you can create. And you have to be good at it, especially today. The brand side, the culture side, the community, that's equally as important, and something that we also enjoy that side of it, and something that we've always just done naturally. You know, maybe in the very early days, we spent more time thinking about, like, who are we and what should we be? And pretty quickly that just got sort of swept up in an authentic representation of who we really are and, like, what we like and the people we like to hang out with. And as people came in, naturally growing our community of friends, of fans, and we've sort of just been guided by our own interests. And that has been very successful because you don't have to, like, you don't have to think too much about it. It's like, oh, I want to do that. Let's do that.
Do you think that your background at art school helps that? Like that you know, you didn't come from a traditional business background and you realize that it's just more than the product, it's the experience?
I think so. I mean, I went to art school because I like the creative process, and that was a sincere interest of mine. So in some ways, it's the same thing. You know, that was something I really wanted to do and I was passionate about. And the sort of brand side of what Half Acre is really that same thing. We're just following our interests, and it's very easy to align Half Acre, actually beer in general, with everything. You know, there's not like, you know, beer goes with pretty much everything. If you can think about food in that way, or you know, we're really into, you know, we have a cycling team. Like after the race, like guys like to drink a few beers, and it goes well with that. Or an art gallery, like, yeah, we'll help support you guys. You know, at the opening, people are going to have some beers and enjoy that. And you can go down a list and keep on going, and really beer can connect with everything. So it's been very automatic in that way.
Half Acre, it goes with everything.
It goes with everything, yeah. Beer, it goes with everything, yeah.
Gabriel Magliaro is the founder of Half Acre here in Chicago. Let's take a break. We come back. I want to talk about what you guys are doing on Lincoln Avenue and expanding that to Balmoral with the new place.
Sounds great.
Stay with us.
I get no kick from champagne. Mere alcohol doesn't thrill me at all. So tell me, why shouldn't it be true? I get a kick out of brew. There's only one beer left.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest, Gabriel Magliaro. He is the founder of Half Acre Brewery here in Chicago. I mean, just a meteoric rise in less than a decade. I mean, Daisy Cutter is it's just known. It's a known beer now. I mean, are you having a tough time getting Daisy Cutter in bars? It can't at this point, right?
No, it's in bars. Yeah, yeah. It's pretty much in most of
those
them.
Days like, from 2006 of you walking in and they're like, those days are gone.
Fortunately, yeah, and I think that's about. It's a more merit-based system today, and all those hurdles that we had at that point in time, they really just don't exist anymore. That familiarity, proven track record of success in a bar, you know, we can sort of demonstrate any of that stuff. And people just typically, they know who we are, and really we're not ever really pushing that beer at this point in time. That beer is pretty widely available.
Right?
So, yeah, we don't have to really push at all.
Well, you know, when you guys got the brewery going in 2008 – on Lincoln Avenue, just north of Irving Park, and I guess it's called North Center, right?
It is North Center.
At that time, you know, you're making a big leap to do that. As it's grown, I mean, you've had to keep pace with this beer. And, you know, the palate for Half Acre product for Daisy Cutter is there. People want it. Talk about the challenges of being successful.
Yeah, it can be a challenge at times, and we maybe the most common thing, and with Half Acre and other great breweries out there, sort of it's a good problem to have. Been like this thing that has always bounced back to us, but a problem is a problem, and at times the challenges of inventory issues and maybe a distributor wanting to sell more of something, and our inability to produce more of something, or growing at a rate that it's hard to sort of catch up and to understand the realizations of every sort of increment that you experience. So, yeah, I mean, at times that success has been, well, it certainly put a lot of, you know, stress on me personally at times because I was working excessive hours and things like that. And as time goes on, it hasn't relied as much on my personal sweat, which is nice. But, yeah, all with every bit of success has come another set of challenges and hurdles and all those things that make it possible.
For you guys, I mean, to have a brewery or like this, an idea, and you collect the capital to start a brewery on Lincoln Avenue, to see it, I don't want to say overnight, but within 3 to 5 years, to see your beer being accepted in that way. You talked about, you know, you like the process of making stuff, but it was not necessarily a business background. Is it tough, you know, when you have that kind of meteoric rise to chart what your long-term future is, you know, without that quote-unquote business background because, you know, it's just all coming at you? Each way?
Yeah. Every sort of level of growth has presented its challenges. I do have a business partner that does have a business background. And so I've been in the fortunate position to learn a lot by my, you know, myself going out and reading a lot and trying to be a good student of business and going through things that we're going through. But there have been a lot of people that I've tapped and that have been partners to Half Acre and myself that made these choices a lot more clear and given me a lot of reasons to make the calls that we've made. So, yeah, we've tried to be good students and work real hard and try not to screw up too often.
Well, I mean, a big part, and we have a lot of people from the tech sector that come on the show,
sure.
Business leaders, venture capitalists, those kind of people. And they always talk about risk. And they talk about it from, and a lot of times it's, you know, risk in, you know, business models, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
For you as a brewer and one that's been successful, how important is risk? I mean, to try new things, to try a new batch, to try a new beer?
It's been crucial to everything we've done. So on a business perspective, there's been a lot of risk, financial risk, you know, stepping out there and doing some things that weren't common in our industry out of the gate when we started.
Like events and things like that?
No, not so much that. But for instance, our store on Lincoln Avenue and the tap room, those things, they've become commonplace, but they had never happened before. You know, attaching a retail store to a brewery and navigating that legally. Same thing with the tap room. These things were things that hadn't happened. So we sort of have to step out there, put some weight and obviously resources behind them, and hopefully prove to the legal bodies in front of them that we can do this, because it was all just gray area. And we sort of busted through and we reaped the rewards for that in terms of brewing beer, experimentation and trying new things and stepping out into uncomfortable places. That's also been really important and scary, but we've been rewarded for that too.
You know, you look at your website and you look at the seasonal stuff that you guys produce or the one-off stuff that you do. It's a lot. I mean, you guys do put, it's not just like you're just resting on the laurels of Daisy Cutter and maybe the Pony Pills. There seems to be a spirit, a culture, if you will, about experimenting at Half Acre. Is that a fair assessment?
That is a fair assessment. Yeah, that was something that we did. I think today it's almost a requirement, you know, if I'm being honest, because I think that's part of the drinking experience for people. Certainly your bigger craft beer fans, they want a wider portfolio of beers. They want to get deeper into what you're about. So that's just more a part of brewing culture today. But, you know, earlier on and 08 and 09 and 2010, we were brewing a lot of beers and we were kind of putting it out there, and we don't have a process where we brew 5 gallons of something. We're like, oh, that was pretty good or not so good. We go right to about 500 gallons of it. And so, yeah, there's a little bit of, you know, we're not amateurs and we have a good understanding of what we're doing, certainly at this point and somewhat at that point too. So, yeah, you gotta put yourself out there a little bit. And
makes me think, is there a time when you're like, all right, the batch is done, and you're all like, oh no, that man didn't work out.
No, we've always been pretty close. I think maybe failure is not the right word, but there are beers that you miss the mark in one way or another, and sort of some level of disappointment. But it's not like dump it. You know, we don't find ourselves in that place.
Well, you know, talking about risk, you guys are moving into, I mean, you have moved to the brewery up in Balmoral, a whole other, I mean, expanded area. I mean, you are really, if not doubling, I don't want to say tripling, but the space is tremendous for you guys. This is a huge time for your business to take it from what has been a very, very successful craft brewery to a, what would you say, a very, 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 very successful craft brewery? Like, what's the next step
for
you guys?
Well, I think, in technical terms, we're going from being, you know, we sort of just, if you're producing less than 15,000 barrels, they call that a microbrewery.
Okay.
And then more than 15, we refer to as a regional brewery. And we had just sort of crossed that 15,000 barrel mark. And so obviously we're going to be deeper into the regional status. And I know we've basically, you know, doubled the size of our output, you know, pretty quickly here. So yeah, there was some level of risk in building again. I mean, now we have two breweries and all that goes into running two facilities and overlapping of some staff and all those complexities. But there was also risk in not doing it because we were capped. We couldn't make any more beer in that space. And that sort of caps the trajectory of a lot of things. Our beers, it caps the trajectory of our staff. So we felt this was crucial in our success in building again. And for better or for worse, at that point, we were making a bunch of beer, but we weren't even really selling beer in the suburbs all that much. And I think to be a real powerhouse Chicagoland brewer, like, you got to sell beer the suburbs.
Well, let's take a break because we'll get to the news. And I want to ask you about that. That's, we'll come back and talk about how you place your stuff. How, where can you find a half acre? When are you out of your area? You know, because I'm always fascinated by the idea that if I go to Colorado, for instance, and I walk into a liquor store in Fort Collins, I may see half acre, but I see their half acre. You know, I see the Fort Collins based half acre, or
sure.
And it's a very local and it's a very proud business. And so, how do you break through with that, especially when you're brewing from somewhere that's not local? We'll talk more with founder Gabriel Magliaro here on the download. He's the founder of Half Acre. Stay with us.
All we need is a 10 and a 5 or a car and a key and an able driver. B-double-E-double-R-U-N.
Welcome back to the download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, so we call this the big table.
It's pretty big.
It's pretty big. Gabriel Magliaro. He's the founder of Half Acre Brewery here in Chicago. One of the most successful craft brewers here in town. I mean, really, if you think about it, Goose Island's really not a craft beer. I mean, they're not a regional brewer anymore because they're owned. Are they owned by Budweiser or in some form?
They are.
Three Floyds, which is out in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Like you mentioned, Two Brothers, out, which is like Aurora, western suburbs. Revolution. I'm trying to think. I mean, there's a huge ecosystem.
Oh, it's gigantic at this point.
But you guys are at the head.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, qualifiers for what that means. But, you know, we're one of the bigger breweries for sure. And, yeah, we like to think we have a solid place within the overall craft beer scene in Chicago for sure.
Let me ask you about that because I really, like, right before the break, we were talking about the idea that, you know, you go to a different state and you go into their liquor store and you go into the craft beer area, you will see everything that it's their half acre, mm-hmm. right? Colorado or Philadelphia or Florida, whatever it is.
Yep.
How do you get past being a Chicago craft beer maker in this country?
I think, you know, in a lot of ways when, for instance, us, which we really only sell beer in Chicagoland, a little bit in Philadelphia because our families are back there. We will be selling a little bit of beer in New York City as well and kind of working those two markets together. And there's a lot of people in those three places, mm-hmm. obviously. So I think when you begin to sell beer somewhere else, you're kind of exporting that place a little bit. I think you become synonymous with when you go to Vinny's or wherever you buy mm-hmm. beer and you buy a Fat Tire from New Belgium. A little bit, you're kind of like investing in Colorado
right,
a little bit, right? I mean that.
And so you really have to be synonymous with Chicago.
Or I think it winds up happening. That could be a good or bad thing depending on what's going on. But so I think a little bit is about exporting where your place. And I think today, you know, I think you have the right ambition because it's very complicated out there right now with all the brewers and a lot of national interest in terms of brewers that are going from mm-hmm. a regional position to a national position and little guys trying to get to that regional level and all those sort of things. So there's a lot of crossing over and overlapping of breweries right now. So I think you can go to other places. And as long as your hopes are sort of relative to what people really want from you, I think selling beer in other places is good. If you have a need to hit a certain volume, that is probably right. not possible.
Well, let me add, I mean, Goose Island's a good example of, you know, they made a deal with Budweiser and there was, and this was a couple years back, so there was a little bit of it wasn't bad press, but there was just like a lot of murmuring, like, oh, the big dogs, you know?
Yeah.
Big beer has a huge presence in Chicago. I mean, Miller Coors is here. These seems to be the birthplace of a lot, Milwaukee and Chicago, of a lot of those big name brand beers.
Yeah.
What's your relationship like with big beer? And does Half Acre have to compete with them at some point, or is it completely separate?
Well, I think, you know, big beer has a big presence everywhere, and it's never been a hurdle for Half Acre Beer Company, larger macro producers. In the early days, it was more about buying practices and sort of like a distributor relationship issue more than anything else. We've never felt like a direct pressure from a bigger brewer, like mm-hmm. trying to box us out of something. Never. And we actually, we share distribution channels with them. I think what's happening today is that they are, you know, the larger producers are feeling a pressure from the success of brewers like us. Certainly the combination of all the brewers
well,
like us.
Well, they have to make a decision, right? They have to make a decision of whether or not they produce their own independent, it's almost like music or film, right? When they put their own sort of, you know, slap a label on and say this is independent, even though it's produced by Budweiser. Or buy you, right? And you're seeing it done in both ways. There was, an article not too long ago that circulated about our big beer companies buying craft beer to get them out of the way.
I don't think to get them out of the way because they spend a lot of money on them. I think it's more about, of course, to try to capitalize on that growth, but also to control it and to slot it in tastefully next to what they want to do. So I think it's more about a control issue and obviously capitalizing on an obvious trend against what they've been doing for a long time. So I think it's just business, and they have the resources to do it.
Right.
And there's a lot of breweries that are in a position where they need something because they are getting to a point where they're going to retire. Like they've been doing this for a long time. Something has to happen in order for them to transition. And sometimes that's attractive or the path of least resistance or whatever it might be. So I don't think it's evil or, you know, I just see it as what it is. And this is a natural consequences of where we are as an industry.
Does Half Acre think about that? Think about the idea of big beer coming along? And are you open to the idea of them coming in and saying, we'd like to make you an offer. We would like to buy Half Acre.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something that we're considering whatsoever. I'm always interested in the news, right? I mean, you know, it's mind-boggling, really, some of the numbers that are being thrown around today. It's wild, you know, to a point where
like hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars,
billion, you know, the billion word is thrown around. So and it's seemingly in an irrational place. So I'm always interested in just the news and learning more about what's going on and all the complexities that continue to pop up. But it is not something that we want for our business or ourselves.
You know, I'm just like you mentioned earlier, and I think that a lot of people will always compare the beers. Say, well, you know, the craft beer is a better taste. It's produced more authentically than the watered-down taste of big beer. But going back to what we talked about with culture, it seems like big beer kind of figured out, okay, we're going to be the football beer, or we're going to be the cult sports beer, or whatever it is, just like you mentioned about, you know, everyone needs a partnering with different institutions.
Mm-hmm.
And that Half Acre is a beer that is almost a counterculture beer. It's an independent beer or an independent culture. Do you see it that way? That it's like they follow the same thought that you do.
Yeah,
in the sense that they're selling
the last culture. 150 years. Yeah, right. I think is the difference. I think what it is we're casting different nets, right? And for a brewery like Anheuser-Busch, for instance, or MillerCoors, they're casting a really, really wide net. And sometimes the only way that you can appeal to such a wide swath of people is kind of by removing characteristic, right? Because you have your taste, I have my taste,
right.
And sometimes the only way to meet our two tastes are to remove a lot of the taste, and it's like it's blank in a way. So I think over time, over the years, they stripped it down to where it's a very palatable, scientifically perfect liquid that you can rely on, which is great, and that is a craft in and of itself. Craft brewers, I think we are brewing beers that hopefully appeal to a smaller group of people in a much richer way. So we're making something that hopefully you like a lot, and you might not like it, and I, you know, hopefully like it too. So and I think what's happening now, and really that what is amazing about today, is that the group of people that are identifying with these stronger flavors is widening and widening, mm-hmm. and widening, and people that are coming of drinking age, they're growing up with it now, right? Mm. I mean, their people are stealing their dad's beer, and it's Daisy Cutter. You know, it's kids. You know that like, we are raising craft beer kids now.
Wow.
So
that's fascinating.
Yeah.
you are absolutely right. Gabriel Magliaro is he is the founder of Half Acre here in Chicago. When we come back, let's talk about Chicago. You've had choices. You could have expanded. You looked at land in Pennsylvania. You came up on Colorado culture. But you chose Chicago, so we'll talk about that and why you stay here on The Download. Stay with us.
Because she likes the beer like I like the brew. Pop the pony keg, refilling my 22 with the ales, pilsner, lager, or the stout. Hops till the party stops, I make the people shout. Call the cops, call us pops, somebody carry him home. Royalty at Bevmo, my party well known. Got the full sale, wholesale, not to do well. Sometimes Charmaine, yelling like Timmy. Your fellas keep it stellar, keep it domestic. My big old flat tie, time to get reckless. Wherever I'm at, ayo, the party's right here. You like Ed Hardy? We like beer!
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest, Gabriel Magliaro. He's the founder of Half Acre Brewery here in Chicago, which just expanded on Balmoral and Damon. I guess it's Bowmanville, right? Is that what they call it?
It is Bowmanville.
Yeah, I know that area is great. Just north of Damon and Foster, they got the old scooter place, not a Vespa place anymore, but that's a fun little neighborhood back there, and you guys are adding to it. Chicago, you know, we mentioned you came here for art school, but you grew up in Pennsylvania. You spent your formative years in Colorado. Why Chicago?
Yeah, it was never an intention of mine to actually stay here, but when looking at what it meant to start a brewery here, it was certainly very appealing, and for all the, you know, there's a ton of people here, and it is definitely a beer town. It wasn't a half acre town or even a craft beer town at that point in time, but people definitely identify with drinking beer in Chicago. So getting off the ground was sort of circumstance. We quickly realized that Chicagoans are above all passionate about Chicago, and they sort of opened their hearts and lives to what we were doing, and we were thoroughly embraced and continue to be today. So, you know, this Chicago owns Half Acre, really, and that's kind of how I look at it anyway. It's you know, sort of it belongs to Chicago, and I think our ambitions, you know, that's what we aim to be is a powerhouse Chicago brewery.
You know, the city of Chicago, the government entity, has come a long way in 2015. I mean, even in your time, you've seen antiquated laws that are on the books about alcohol. There's, like you said, there's a favoritism to distribution models that of the past, and laws on the books that, frankly, you know, are actually hindered craft beer being able to be produced here. Mm-hmm. How is your relationship with Chicago, and how, from that element, how has it grown?
It has changed dramatically. When we first got involved, there was so much gray area, and interpretation was like the key word of the time. Like, we interpret this law to mean this, and we would say, well, we interpret it to mean that. And there was some gray area, and we got a lot of things that rolled our way, and I think Chicago often, it gets a bad rap. It probably deserves it for a lot of things, but we have never been totally roadblocked by all that, you know, Chicago laws or Illinois laws. That has never been the thing that, you know, God, we would be doing so much better if. There have been some hurdles, and things are not easy, and they take time, and you have to work at it. But if you want to put forth the effort and you're reasonable in your hopes and what you hope to accomplish, you're good to go. So I think Chicago has been fair to Half Acre.
Let me ask you this on a personal note for you. Why do you like living here in Chicago, if you do? I mean, what is it about this town that you know, keeps
you know,
you
I'm
here?
I grew up in a rural area, and I probably personally identify with a rural area more than city living. But Chicago is home for me, and I think it's that familiarity, and it's a place that I've been since 2001, and so it's just, to me, it's the place that has offered me a lot of success, and I've been able to explore my adult life here. You know, I was 27 when we got Half Acre going, and it has allowed me to experience a lot, and all through the lens of this town. So I feel very fortunate that I'm able to exist here, and you know, we have the two breweries, as you mentioned. My house is sort of in between the two of them, so I have like this triangle, this personal triangle, and so I kind of live in like a small town, and I bebop and forth around my little neighborhood, and it's very manageable. It's a very warm town, and there is so much happening here again that we can connect Half Acre to that. It makes it a real easy and pleasurable job.
Let me ask you this. I mean, can you foresee a future where Half Acre's not in Chicago?
Not really. I mean, not in terms of moving it out of Chicago. I can see a future where we have things going on in other places. I mean, that sounds like we have things all over the place. I mean, I could see maybe one other thing somewhere else that allowed us a certain personal freedom to spend time differently or something like that. But
like a Half Acre in Key West.
Yeah, that's where I was born, actually.
Really?
Yeah, so that's where my family used to live. So probably not the Keys, but I could see something along those lines that was more about a personal interest than it was about what was best for us professionally. But I don't ever see removing the guts of Half Acre from this town.
Gabriel Magliaro, I said it both ways to hold hour. I apologize for that. They both work.
Fine.
He's the founder of Half Acre. Thanks for being my guest tonight at the big table.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Hey, it's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock when Patty Vasquez takes over. Pretty late, Patty Vasquez. Bob's here setting up music, so it's new. I guess it's live music Monday. I always want to say new music Monday. I guess that is the case. It's new music, but live music. Live music Monday tonight, 11 to 2. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, we got to do it. We have to talk Star Wars. Jimmy Mack will be here from Rebel Force Radio. We'll talk about tonight's world premiere, which is now all over Twitter. And I saw the best tweet of all was someone saying, who's going to be the first jerk to spoil it for everybody? Like, and how are they going to be eviscerated on social media? Like, it wasn't about when it was, or if it was when. I thought that's exactly how. What's going to be the punishment for the person who's like, Han Solo's Darth Vader, and then we all go, oh man, and that's it. So, coming up at 10 o'clock, 312-981-7200, the number. Like I said earlier, if you have questions that you never really wanted to ask your friends, like if you're maybe you're a Star Wars novice, kind of like I am, you know, like I have a lot of friends who just give quotes, you know, like in a casual conversation, they say something like, I'm with you too, Han. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that is. So if you have any of those questions, like what's a Wookiee, you know, how does Yoda hold a lightsaber would be a good one, right? He's a little guy. Ewoks versus Jar Jar Binks. Jimmy Mack will be the guy that's coming up 10 o'clock here on The Download. But this hour, a new Touch Vision documentary features local journalist Brianna Wellen. Wellen works for the Chicago Reader and just recently found a lump near her neck. The 25-year-old got it checked out, and she was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. Next was surgery, chemotherapy, and all that goes with cancer at the young age of 25 years old. The documentary is called My Quarter Life Cancer, and it's shown in three parts at touchvision.com. Carrie Pang and Jessica Galliard produced a doc, and they're here in studio with me. Good to see you. Thanks for coming in, as well as Brianna Wellen. Brianna, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Thanks for coming in, everybody. We can all talk now.
Mike's on. Hi, okay. Thanks. Right.
So let's start with you, Brianna. This is, I mean, I, you know, I said, I mean, I we know each other, and I saw you, you know, maybe in a couple years back, and then I saw this documentary, and I'm like, oh, I need to catch up. I'm sorry this happened to you. Tell us about the diagnosis. How'd this come about?
It was about a year ago, last year around Thanksgiving, is when I noticed the lump on my neck. And I was with my family for the holiday, and everyone that I was with was just like, you probably just need to get a massage or something. Like, it's probably nothing. But I got it checked out anyway in the coming weeks, and that turned into just a lot of tests. And then about 5 months later, I finally got the diagnosis that it was Hodgkin's lymphoma.
When you went into your doctor and they were, did they take it seriously like that? Did they say this is something that's abnormal?
Yeah. Well, it was funny the whole time. They were like, okay, worst case scenario, this is lymphoma, but like that's probably not it. Like that was kind of the phrase the whole time. So then once it actually was lymphoma, by that time I had decided in my mind that I like for sure had cancer, so I was like, yeah, okay, I know.
So you got that diagnosis, and take us back to that moment, because it's a little bit in the documentary about, yeah, you know, the, or at least the text about it being right after Easter or around Easter.
Yeah, it was, I was home with my family in the Rockford, Illinois area for Easter, and my nurse called me and said, why don't you guys just come in first thing Monday morning? So that's like the first sign that it's probably not good news when they want you to come in right away.
They'll tell you on the phone, right?
Yeah. So I went in with my parents and my youngest sister, and he just straightforward came in and said, well, it's not good. It's lymphoma. It's like, right away, here are the things that we're going to do to take care of it. So the next day, I went to the oncologist, and 2 weeks later, I was in my first chemotherapy session.
So, I mean, at this point, because there were so many tests that you were going through, and you said, you know, you kind of knew, worst case scenario, you knew this was going to be. Did you already sort of prepare yourself for the idea that the next day would be the oncologist, the next step would be chemotherapy, that kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. When it happened, I just knew I wanted to take care of it as quickly as possible. So there wasn't even like a pause. The second we got back to my apartment, we were calling the oncologist, like making sure, like, let's just get this out of the way as fast as we can, pretty much.
And the idea that, I mean, what makes this, I mean, it's a terrible story regardless. And just for the listeners, so we don't stretch this out. I mean, you are recovering. You are cancer free.
Yes.
And, you know, this was a year and a half ago or so, right?
Right.
But at the age of 25, and that's what I think that the hook is on this to be, you know, that's a very young age. I mean, I don't know what the statistics are, but were the doctors at least somewhat perplexed at the idea of it being so young?
Well, apparently Hodgkin's lymphoma is like a young person's disease, but a lot of people who are my age wouldn't necessarily go in to the doctor if they find like a lump on their neck or something. So it's not found till much later. There's still no idea how long it was in my body or how long I had it. So part of the reason I wanted to do the documentary is that young people would go to the doctor and get things checked out so they could take care of stuff when it's easy to take care of.
Right. Well, let's make that transition to Carrie Pang, Jessica Gillard. Let's talk about why you guys did this, because it wasn't Jessica, why don't you tell me, like, what was the impetus to do this? I mean, was it just you knew Brianna and she had, you know, she told you about this diagnosis?
Yeah, you know, Brianna and I had known of each other for many years because we went to the same school. We had the same group of friends because we both worked in local media, and you know how that goes. But we'd never met before, and I saw this GoFundMe getting shared by everyone that I knew on Facebook, and I recognized the name, and I saw Brianna Wallen, and I saw Hodgkin's lymphoma, and I was just like, oh, no, you know. I'm sure she got that reaction from people. Like, oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. But I read into her story a little bit more, and everything that – all the stuff that I had known about Brianna up until that point, I kind of felt like we had a lot of similar experiences growing up and in college and in the city, and I felt a kind of certain weird connection to her, and I wanted to know more, and I knew from my friends that she was a very open person and that she's an amazing communicator, and that I've always wanted to tell this story about someone who was dealing with something this huge in their life in a great way. And I was just like, I think this is perfect. You know, I think that she would be open to talking with us and letting us follow her around and be really intrusive.
How'd you guys do it? I mean, Carrie, what was the process? I mean, it is a very intrusive right. process. How do you deal with that?
Right. I think one of it is definitely Brianna is so open. You know, there are a lot of moments where my camera's like in her face and I'm like, Brianna, is this okay? Like, is it okay that I'm in your bathroom? Kind of like right at your face when you're like putting your wig on. She's like, yeah. And I'm like, all right then. And so I think it's a matter of building up trust too as a journalist and a filmmaker, to build up trust that you won't portray your subjects in a certain way that is not honest to who they are. And so if you're real with them, they're real with you. And well, so I think
was it difficult? I mean, as on both of you, Brianna, you too. I mean, it's one thing to say, yeah, I want to make this documentary. It's another to be in your bathroom, to, you know, when you're going through something that you've never gone through before in chemotherapy, having this extra layer of documentation.
Well, like they said, I was trying to be super open. And I think part of getting the diagnosis and going through everything just had me drop a certain filter of my life where, like, I didn't have the energy to not be that open. So that was part of it for sure. And then just Jessica and Carrie have been, like, we become really good friends through this process. So them being so great towards me did make it easier for me to open up and share things with them along the way.
Let me ask you, Jessica, you know, one of the things about this documentary, it was not, you didn't want to jump in and just do something that was, let's follow someone who has cancer. I mean, there were other sort of storylines that you were interested in pursuing.
Mm-hmm. We made like three different documentaries throughout this whole thing. We had three different stories we were going to tell, but the one that you can see now, we wanted it to be very informative, but also tell a really important story about who Brianna is, because we didn't want it to be a story about cancer. We wanted it to be a story about someone dealing with cancer, a story about Brianna. So I think it turned out pretty well, thanks to Brianna. But I think we wanted to focus on things like that the day-to-day finances. You know, Brianna talked about how, aside from all the medical bills, she found herself so tired from the chemotherapy that she couldn't walk the two blocks to the train to go to work anymore. And so she's taking cabs everywhere. And if you live in Chicago, you know that if you're going from the north side to downtown twice a day, you're spending easily a couple hundred dollars a month. So stories like that, we really, that people would never have thought of. we wanted to make sure that we told that story.
Well, the documentary is called My Quarter Life Cancer. It's shown in three parts at touchvision.com. Let's take a break. We come back more with Brianna Whelan, Jessica Gillard, and Carrie Pang here on The Download. Stay with us. It's The Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. With you till 11 o'clock tonight. We're talking about the documentary My Quarter Life Cancer that was produced by TouchVision.com, producers Carrie Pang and Jessica Gillard. And the subject of My Quarter Life Cancer is the woman with cancer herself. Not anymore. Right? It's sort of like became an introduction real quick, like I was in a boxing ring. Brianna Whelan, thanks for sharing your story.
Yes,
let's talk about it. You know, we left the conversation when we went for the break about the things that we didn't know about the struggle that someone has, the struggle when they have cancer. One of the biggest issues was finances. Mm-hmm. That was a big part of it because insurance, your deductible, all that kind of stuff, it is maddening how much money it costs to cure cancer.
It really is. I mean, I've said this in the documentary, but ending hospital bill was like a year and a half or more of my college tuition, which I'm still paying off, you know, loans for that. So putting that extra cost on top of everything else was crazy. I don't know how people get sick. It blows my mind.
Now, you were covered. You were yes. lucky at the age of you were diagnosed when you were 24, right?
Right.
And then you did chemotherapy when you were 25 years old. But you fell under the insurance of your dad.
Yes. Which
and that saved the
great.
Day. Yeah,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, it ended up covering maybe 80% or more, looking at the numbers people next to me, of like the cost, which when I got that first bill, it just said like $35,000 at the top. And that was before I went through insurance and everything, but never really dealing with that or being sick before. I didn't comprehend it in that way. And I was
right.
like, oh my God, how am I going to go to the doctor again? I have no idea. So
mentally, does it mess with your head when you're trying to go through recovery, when you're trying to, you know, to focus on the fact that you're going to get sick from chemotherapy, you're going to do this thing, and then you get a bill that says, oh, by the way, here's 35 grand.
Yeah.
We'll figure out who pays it later, but it's 35 grand.
No, yeah, I mean, it's an extra layer of stress that, you know, the whole time you're going through this, they're like, just try to relax and, like, do acupuncture, massages. It's like, it's hard to relax when you're sending me bills for thousands of dollars, like, constantly, but...
And for you guys, for the producers, you both, you know, Carrie, for you... shooting this, I mean, that was a big part of, you know, I forgot mm-hmm. if it was the second one or third one, but there was that sort of realization of the money. And
right.
how important was it for you to capture the storylines that weren't just necessarily recovery?
Yeah, I think it was definitely very important. As Jessica was mentioning, that was kind of the whole point of why we wanted to do this documentary, that a lot of stories about cancer out there, I think, are sob stories, you know, like cancer, boohoo, and then people die, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, or people like live, and like it's this great inspirational story. But with Brianna, because she's so open with us, you get to see this the nitty gritty of cancer, where it's like you wake up and you're like, I don't want to go to work, or like you get the bills, and like, so yeah, I think those moments that we capture with her just at her kitchen counter, kind of just like sifting through that wad of bills that she had, it was just like nuts, even for me to watch, you know, and for her to like respond to that too. So
at one point, Brianna said that my life hasn't changed a whole lot, except I go to the doctor a lot more.
Yeah.
Some days I just don't feel good.
Well, that's a big part of the story too, is your humor. I mean, your ability to sort of... compartmentalize this in a way, or be able to not respond in a way to the cancer diagnosis that it was morose or depressing. You were able to use your humor to help.
Yeah, that came in right away. Like the day I got diagnosed, that night I went out to a bar with a bunch of my friends, and we were like, how many drinks can we get for free? Because I got diagnosed with cancer today, and I kind of like... And we got a lot for free.
Right.
Yeah.
Good.
Yep.
The one person is like, nah, that's not good enough.
He was like, are you serious? And we're like, no, yeah. Do you want to call my doctor? And so it just seemed like an easier way. It's kind of how I lived my life before anyway. And why would I want to waste time being sad when I could, mm-hmm. I have like hilarious friends around me and a just a better way to deal with it than sitting around crying for myself.
Let me ask you, what was the hardest part about it? What was it, the chemotherapy? What was it for someone who's not gone through cancer, people listening right now or have loved ones who are going through it? What was the hardest part about the process?
I mean, the chemotherapy, it's definitely nothing you can describe to someone, like how it makes you feel. And that was the hardest part along the way, was random days when I would just not feel well. And I couldn't really explain why I wasn't feeling well. And that's actually, so my mom has had multiple sclerosis for years. And that we really bonded over that fact, because I would explain something to her and she'd be like, oh yeah, I feel like that all the time. I'm just like, this is how you feel? So in a way it was the hardest part with some of my friends, but it also was nice to have that comfort with my mom, and that brought us a lot closer together along the way.
What has been your relationship with your friends and people and even, you know, acquaintances who find out about this or maybe even saw it in the documentary for the first time like me? But what has been your relationship? How have they responded to you in this?
I mean, when I first got the diagnosis, most of my close friends had more of an emotional reaction to it than I even did, or like a lot of my family did. So that was kind of one of the hardest things, actually, was telling people right away, because I was waiting for them to start like crying or be like, oh my God, what are you going to do? But then along the way, I mean, the thing that's made me most emotional probably throughout the whole process is seeing this group of people that I surround myself with being so supportive and like loving, and just the hours that they spent at the hospital with me, or coming over when I'm having a bad day and just like watching Top Chef for like 5 hours when I can't do anything else. It's been really amazing, and I think a lot of my friendships are stronger because of it.
For you, Jessica and Carrie, what surprised you the most from this experience?
Brianna was very hard to break, I feel like. While she was very open with us about her, any emotions that she was going through, any bad feelings or good feelings, I didn't expect her to be so, and I know that I think she kind of hates when people talk about this, but so incredibly positive all the time. She talks about when other people are breaking down in front of her, she's kind of like, they're there, it's okay. It's like, you're the one with cancer. Like, how is this like this? But Brianna always is able to put on a good face, and she's very self-aware of how she's feeling and who she is, and she's grown a lot throughout the past 7 months.
Carrie, what do you think?
I definitely echo the same statement. I think we're all journalists here, you know, so I was talking to her, Jessica, about how difficult it was to break Brianna, because Brianna knew exactly what we were doing. There was this point in the last interview where she was like, you're trying to make me cry. I'm like, I you am, and, but did. Yeah, it's crazy how I think you really are very positive, Brianna, and the one thing that she often cries about is how loving people are towards her, and that's the thing that gets her emotional, which is, you know, it's just who she is.
All right, let me ask the same question. We'll wrap it here. Let me ask it to you, Brianna. What out of this whole experience, and it continues, but, you know, just with the idea of having to continue the routine, the checkups, all that kind of stuff, what surprised you the most about your experience with cancer?
I mean, I think that if you would have told me that I would go through this like a year or two ago, I wouldn't have thought I would have even been able to do it. Even like small things, like I used to be terrified of getting like my blood drawn and so queasy, and now it's just like, yeah, can do whatever. And I think I've just realized how much I can overcome if I really put my mind to it, and it's made a lot of my problems in the past seem pretty insignificant, that like just don't need to worry about small stuff, which I guess that's kind of a cheesy thing to say, but it's true.
Well, the documentary is called My Quarter Life Cancer, and shown in three parts at touchvision.com. The editors, producers, shooters, Carrie Pang and Jessica Gillard, and the subject, Brianna Whelan, thank you so much for coming in. You can find the documentary at touchvision.com. Thanks, guys. Thank you. The download here on WGN. Justin Kaufman, Jimmy Mack coming up. A couple minutes, we're going to talk Star Wars. I'm excited. At first, I was like, I have a rule. You know, and my rule is that I don't go on opening weekend ever to anything.
avoid the crowd.
Yeah, I'm the kind of guy that's like, it's really to avoid the crowd, and it's because I'm have stunted growth when it comes to curmudgeonry. Like, I'm just a curmudgeon. I don't want to deal with it. So, but I try to pawn it off as principle, where I'm like, you know what? I'm not giving them their money. I'm going to wait 2 weeks. Then I'll show those guys. I'll show Hollywood. But this is the one where, you know, and it's funny because, and I can't wait to talk to Jimmy about this because, you know, I have a son, 8-year-old. I talked to him just about, you know, do you want to go see Star Wars? And he's like, oh, yeah.
Hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, all right. So there's this guy, Admiral Akbar, and he's just like, I don't care. I don't care about the backstory.
Oh.
Like, he doesn't care about the Ewoks, and he doesn't care about who's Luke Skywalker and who's the dad. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, I'll go see the movie. And I go, and then this is another thing, and we'll get all this out of the way before Jimmy comes in. But so then I'm like, okay, well, you know what? I had to, like, hassle with him. And I'm like, I want to show you, because we've already seen him. We've seen all 6 movies. But I want to do it again as this sort of, like, fandom up to the movie, like, watch all 6 to watch the movie.
Oh,
I don't really
nice.
Care about the 3 that came out in the 2000s.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
care about that. But I want him to see New Hope, Star Wars, Empire, and Jedi.
Yeah.
And there's no New Hope. It's called Star Wars.
Yeah.
And he doesn't care. And so, but then I was like, I was just doing that dad thing where I'm like, well, you know what? We have 2 hours to burn, and we're going to watch it. I'm going to force you to watch Star Wars. And I go to On Demand, and I'm like, we're going to watch it. I know it's on demand. And they are not offering Star Wars to rent. You know, I don't want to rent it because I'm like, I already taped it off a Spike at one point, and then, like, the DVR got erased when I moved. And so now I don't have it. So, like, I'm like, they're probably going to charge me to watch Star Wars, which is ridiculous. They don't even let you rent it. It's to buy only.
Yeah, that's
$21.99.
That's a jip.
$21.99 for just the first Star Wars. And then Empire's $21. So I'm like, well, maybe it's Comcast. So I go to Amazon, you know, Amazon Prime or Netflix. It's all the same.
Yeah.
Netflix doesn't have it. And Amazon's $21.99 to buy. You can own a digital copy. I don't want to own it. I don't want it. He doesn't want to watch it.
Yeah. Well, you can buy the digital copy and then pass it on to him.
And you, yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, I wonder how that's going to work when I finally go, I'd like to give you my copy. Comcast, is there any way to get this one off of this one to this one? Oh, that's an APGG format. Oh, you know what? I screwed up. I got to buy another one because I could have swore that I bought the trilogy on cassette. Didn't you? Like a VHS cassette for Christmas at one point 10 years ago. Now that's obsolete. Then I probably got the Criterion DVD collection at one point, and that's obsolete.
Get the laser disc. I'm trying to put that in.
That's what my buddy Steve said. Well, don't worry. I got the Blu-ray at home. I kind of want the Blu-ray. Blu-ray means nothing to me. That's an in-between technology. It needs to be like, I need to be able to use my hands to go, like, to draw, like, pantomime Star Wars on the screen, and they know what I'm talking about. But yeah, I was annoyed, but I guess it plays into the commercialism of the whole thing. Like, it just seems like Disney's like, we spent way more than we thought we were going to on this movie, so we're going to recoup.
I am what you would call not a Star Wars enthusiast. I don't know what, like, when
it's
you talk
a club,
when you,
it's a club.
When you talk about it, I'm like, I am. You're like, you're talking Czechoslovakia.
Really?
I don't know any of those characters.
What,
I mean,
really?
I know Darth Vader,
but you don't know, like, when I made the Greedo joke earlier. You know who that is?
I mean, I know a little bit of the first 3, so I mean, I understand a little bit about
those. You don't
those.
Know Neum Numb, the guy who was next to Lando Calrissian in the?
No, which one's Lando?
Lando's Billy Dee Williams.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
What you look back on, and Billy Dee Williams' career was resurrected. He got to play Lando Calrissian. I digress, but I was like, wow. Before that, he was like, oh, right. Like,
Cole 45.
Yeah. Now, dang, he'll always be Lando. Anyway, go ahead.
But so, yeah, like, so as somebody who's not, I'm not a fan. I shouldn't say I'm not a fan of it. I don't know much about it. And I like the fact that it's there, and I appreciate George Lucas's filmmaking. But I'm really irritated by a lot of people I see on Facebook, you know, with all their Star Wars, like one of my buddies said, you know, like, got my wardrobe for the week, you know, and his, you know, 5 Star Wars t-shirts. I'm like, you're like a 35-year-old man with kids.
Did you see that? Did you see the SNL?
I did.
That was pretty good. He's like,
yeah, it was great.
He shuts the case. He's like, awesome! to put it in the, not take it out of the package.
So I'm just a little bit overwhelmed by all of that, and then the commercialism, and then, like, I was listening to a song on Spotify today, and the Spotify, like, you know, like on the bottom, you can kind of like track your song, how it's going along. It's a lightsaber, and as the song is going, it comes out as white, like the lightsaber.
Facebook did the same thing. I just saw my friend Steve just posted a picture with him and a lightsaber, and at the bottom it's like, you want a lightsaber in your profile picture? No! Nobody wants to do that! We're not honoring a country after a terrorist attack. It's a Star Wars movie. Nobody wants to... I draw the line. But I will say this. I am the guy who, or in the 90s, booed when they introduced commercials at the beginning of movies. I learned that from my dad. One time I was in a movie, you know, maybe 15 or something, and they put a commercial on, and he's got this handful of popcorn, and he's like, boo, and he's embarrassed, and the whole thing is looking at him. He's like, boo. I'm like, why did you just boo? That's so embarrassing. He's like, because I paid $10 to not have the commercials. Like, why? They can't just sneak the commercials in at the beginning. And I'm like, that is so true. Like, that's sneaky. You've broken social contract.
Mm-hmm.
Am I the only one, to quote Walter Sobchak, am I the only one that gives a blank about the rules? We have a social contract. I pay the money up front, right?
Yeah.
And then you give me a movie without commercials. If you want to change, that's fine, but you got to change. You can't. We got to sign a new contract. And you know who's representing me? Karen Lewis. I was hoping for a little bit of this on SNL. Little social experiment, Donnie Trumpet, Chance the Rapper. I love this stat. I didn't know this stat. I saw it on Twitter on the set. It was the first quote-unquote independent artist to ever perform on a Saturday Night Live. They're usually labeled up.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And it's because they have that weird relationship, I'm sure, SNL with Sony Records and Capitol Records or whatever it is, to be like, this is, you know, this is how we keep everybody out. We promote your stuff and you come on us and blah, blah, blah. So Chance the Rapper becomes the first ever independent. So there was no vested interest of anybody to be like, we got to get Chance on there. Like, did the music bookers and Lorne Michaels and Saturday Night Live just all go, oh, we really like this guy's stuff, right?
Yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
You don't?
I mean, I'm sure. I think that's what I like that I like that stat, right? But I wonder if it's not unlike the thing I was just ranting about the movies and the contract. I wonder if the contracts change. Everyone's independent now. You know, are you going to see more of that now? But they still have big money behind them. They still have producers and they have the industry behind them, but there's no such thing as major labels anymore that sign these guys.
Yeah. He definitely will not. Yeah. Come. I bet you in the springtime after, you know, the newcomer that they have this week, Bruce Springsteen will be
right. But next will be, you know, like, I don't even know who's independent like him.
But even like a big band like Wilco.
Right.
They're an independent band. They release stuff on like their own label.
That's what's going to happen. That's going to be the future. And because Chance just came off that tour, the Family Matters tour.
Mm-hmm.
It's great stuff. I'm a huge fan. Huge fan of his work. I think he's trailblazing. But the idea to sort of couch him as an independent, he is independent, yes, quote unquote by definition, but I think that he's got some nice independent forces behind him, like, you know, making him money, which is good.
Yeah.
That's how it is. But it's awesome to see Chicago like that. And I got to say, that kid, I love his enthusiasm, and I love that you can see he loves what he does.
Yeah.
And if anything, you watch the SNL stuff. I mean, I felt like that was what came through on those performances, is that he just loved being there, and he loved that he was celebrating his music with everybody.
I want to get one of those jackets. Yeah, those red like varsity jackets. Are those for sale?
I'll bet you they are.
I want one.
Yes.
Yeah, how good would I walking around with one of those jackets downtown?
You would look like you're back in Oak Lawn. Like, those are the colors of your football team. Hey, it's Pete Sim. It's linebacker Sim. It's middle linebacker Pete Sim. Yeah, you'd look good.
Oh, man.
He was good.
Yeah.
A little shout out to the news, Jason Van Dyke. Although, as I joked earlier, he just said the word Jason Van Dyke. He didn't really...
Yeah, it wasn't really any,
like, fire or, you know, hope he goes to jail kind of thing. But it was, I mean, it was cool. I thought it was cool. It was very cool having that Chicago presence. And I was very proud as a fan and as a Chicagoan to watch him break through like that.
And I, you know, you also mentioned, you know, the Sox hat. He's always wearing that Sox hat everywhere he goes. And,
everywhere.
And I saw Chance tweet, I don't know if it was yesterday or maybe today or something, but he said that he ran into Frank Thomas at the airport and said, you know, Frank said he killed it at SNL, which I enjoyed.
That is good. Now, the only downside, and it's not a downside because I, you know, I'm we can have an hour conversation on this, but the track was the track that he did, the Paradise song that he performed, was dropped that night. Right, you can download it. It was an older one, but I think he remixed and it sounded. Frank Shore Drive had it, featuring Jeremiah, who came out on the track, which is awesome to see another Chicagoan R&B star, and R. Kelly. And that's where I was like, "Nah, you could probably do without R. Kelly." Like of all the people you could with Jeremiah, you're like, "Oh, awesome! You should have another, you know, another having R. Kelly." And then when you listen to R. Kelly's contributions to that track, it's very minimal. And so I'm kind of like, I feel like he just, there's more baggage in having him on the track, especially a young kid, independent.
Yeah,
like,
that's a great point.
You know, that's the only thing where I'm like, and I saw some tweets that were like, really? You know, like R. Kelly, like, and it's not that I don't think that he shouldn't have him on there. I just think that you open up a can of worms that you didn't mean to by just doing this stuff.
Right.
So. It's like what Kanye does when it has R. Kelly on. You're like, he can make his own money.
His next song is going to feature Cosby scatting or something.
Just doing like an 8-minute stand-up. You know, the thing with the kids today. That was my first ever Cosby. The balloon drop. That was my first ever Cosby impression.
I like
the
it.
The balloon should have dropped in the studio. Hey, guys, I gotta tell you. you see his thing today? He countersued. He's countersuing 7 women. I didn't read up on that, so we won't talk about it. But I'm interested to see how that plays out, if that's going to be the new sort of norm of suits and countersuits when it comes to this kind of stuff. We shall find out. Bears, we were going to talk Bears. We're running out of time because we want to get to Jimmy Mack here right after the news. But the one takeaway is that I don't know of any quarterback that is not a scrub. And what I mean is like the second or third. Now you're at the week 15 or wherever we're at, where they're like, Tommy Stella. He played at Eastern Tennessee State, and he's got a chance here. You know, like, because Matt Hasselbeck is down. You're like, but I don't know of any quarterback starting that gets paid big money that throws short as much as Jay Cutler does. Like, he is always making his receivers, like, skip, like, have to go to the ground and get it.
I think, and, you know, everybody talks about Jay Cutler having this, you know, this powerful arm. You know, he can sling the ball 100 yards. But I think what the problem is with Jay Cutler is his footwork is still bad. You know, he throws off his back foot a lot, I guess.
But it just feels like when you watch the game, I mean, you watch like an Aaron Rodgers, or you watch, trying to think of someone else, was, even the younger quarterbacks, even Kirk Cousins. There just isn't that sort of like, I threw it to an area 4 yards short. It just seems like you get that out of maybe a Brian Hoyer, you know, or like I said, a backup quarterback who's getting his first game and he didn't think he was going to play.
Do we know for sure, though, it's not like a Mark Mariani's fault for running a bad route?
That's possible. That's usually...
Whenever I can, I like to blame that guy for something. Although he's been like...
Mariani's a new Tom Waddle, man.
Yeah, he's
new
been pretty
Tom
solid.
Waddle. He catches that ball with authority on that fair catch. He fair catches with authority. That should be his thing. Like, yeah, like he catches, he waves and it catches it and he does a little dance. That's what we were joking yesterday. Like, what if the punt returners who catch the fair catches have a sack dance? They caught the ball and they do like a little hula move or maybe break dance move.
Or they signal for a first down.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
First down.
Yeah, first down.
Because you're starting the drive, I guess. Suppose you're technically right.
Technically, you're right.
You know, it is a first down, but you made a fair catch.
It's a good, very stylish first down to start the to start the drive. That's
You know, and I've always hated sack dances when you're down by 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's like, you know,
didn't Lamar Houston break his knee doing that last year when we were down by like 30 points by the
Patriots?
What a jerk. That's a jerk. That has to be like top. I mean, he's playing great and he should stick around, but that will go down as boner, right?
Yeah, karma's great, isn't it?
Jimmy Mac, my first question, do they put a DJ beat behind this for the new movie, or is it the same track? Exactly. Justin Bieber comes in like, it's Star Wars.
Oh, please, don't bring the Beeb into my Star Wars, okay?
Well, this is it. This is the week that Star Wars fans have been waiting for since 2012.
Yeah.
Here we are. Tonight's the world premiere, but most fans are going to see it this weekend, Thursday night. So, Star Wars fans, are you at the point where you're going to tune out, maybe unplug for a couple days to avoid spoilers? Or are you like a vacuum, sucking up all the trailers, the actor interviews, the cross promotions, the commercial product placement? Jeez. My next guest kind of hit it on the head in his latest episode of the wildly popular podcast Rebel Force Radio, which can be heard here at WGN Plus. Jimmy Mack calls it anticipation fatigue. Jimmy Mack is no stranger to Chicago radio. He's a longtime producer for Johnny B and for Kevin Matthews. And Rebel Force Radio, it is the biggest Star Wars podcast in the galaxy. Jimmy, welcome to the download.
Oh, thank you. What a great introduction. I really appreciate it.
Let's start back here, because this, obviously you talk about anticipation fatigue.
Yeah.
And Pete and I were just talking about it. I mean, we're kind of novices when it comes to the Star Wars fandom.
Right.
It's a lot. I mean, this is a crazy amount of cross promotion and commercial product placement right now.
That's not what is giving me the fatigue. It's the fact that since the sale to Disney, when George Lucas sold the franchise and Lucasfilm to Disney, that was October 30th, 2012. So we've been waiting over 3 years for this film. And there's been a lot of talk. We've been covering it nonstop on Rebel Force Radio, speculating on everything from the cast to the director, to
the plot lines, the stories, everything
you could think of. And now I'm just at a point where I'm tired of the guessing. I'm finished with the speculation.
And they're playing games, too, like all the actors and stuff. Like, yes, they won't talk, or Mark Hamill's not on the carpet, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah, Hamill was not in the theatrical poster. He was on the red carpet tonight. Actually, the premiere is happening as we speak. Right now, they're midway through the film out in L.A., a massive red carpet event tonight.
Shut down Hollywood Boulevard.
Shut it down. Took up three blocks. The red carpet ran three blocks, and it was the length of the street, the width. It was unbelievable. And so right now, yeah, and I have friends sitting in there right now actually watching The Force Awakens.
Now, I kind of hinted to that. There are two kinds of Star Wars fans. There's the one that they're just like sucking it all up and checking everything out and periscoping whatever they can. And then there's the other, and I have friends like this that are like, I am off of Facebook for 4 days, Twitter, see you later. I'm just logging out until I see this movie.
Well, you know, the first screening is going on right now. So the countdown is on. You know, who's going to spoil it? Who's going to be the guy who's going to ruin it for everyone?
That's the issue with this movie. There's a lot of secrets still.
Of secrecy. The people who know everything there is to know about this film at this point still feel like they know nothing. So
how do you do that in this day and age?
How do you hide it? Well, you know, it's a J.J. Abrams trademark. It really is. And with Disney spending $4.4 billion to buy the franchise, they want to be extra careful with it as well. And I appreciate that. In the prequel era, 10 years ago, you would get the novelization a month before the film came out. You would get the comics adaptation a month before the film came out. So by the time the movie came out, you really had to be cagey about avoiding spoilers. But nowadays, it's so much harder with social media. Everyone has a voice. And if someone tweets something and it
will
happen. A legitimate source. Yeah. It will spread like wildfire.
Right.
So, yeah, turn off your social media. The first screening's going on right now. And then tomorrow are media screenings, press screenings. There's one happening here in the city.
Which you talked about on your podcast about whether or not you wanted to do that.
I turned down the invite.
How is that possible? I mean, what goes through your head in turning down the press invite to see Star Wars 2 days before everybody else?
Well, my co-host on Rebel Force Radio is a guy named Jason Swank, and he's just a great communicator, a really tight friend of mine, and someone that I had promised I would see this film with on opening night.
You guys have been partners for a long time.
Yes, we have been. And more than just being podcast partners or business partners, we actually have a really solid foundation for friendship. And Star Wars is the basis of that. Absolutely. I've also made promises to my family especially my sons, 13-year-old Dylan and 16-year-old Michael. I made promises to them that I would see the film. Now, there was a time when I was going to go out to LA, actually. To
and
go
see the premiere?
And hang out there. Yeah, and that just, it wouldn't work out with Jason's schedule, and so we made the decision to watch it here Thursday night. We're going to do a live remote from Hollywood Boulevard Cinema in Woodridge, and then we're going to see the 10 o'clock show together with friends, fellow fans, and family. That's the way I want to do it.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the culture around this, because that is a great thing for people. I remember standing in line for the prequels. I guess
that's what it was called, the prequels.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's part of the fun of this movie is the ability to enjoy it with other members of the community. Jimmy Mack, the show, of course, Rebel Force Radio, WGN Plus podcast, and also the big remote that's going to be at the Hollywood Boulevard.
Hollywood Boulevard Cinemas in Woodridge.
Got it. Coming up. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Stay with us. It's my favorite song of all the Star Wars.
Oh, I love this. Yeah. The Cantina theme.
Cantina. All right, so 312-981-7200. We're talking Star Wars, and I want to make sure people have the opportunity to either ask a question of Jimmy Mack or possibly give an anecdote about standing in line or what they're going to do with their Star Wars premiere. So, you know, I'm going to give away a pair of tickets here to be part of the studio audience for Miracle on Jerry Wells Street. That's our presentation and version of the radio play Miracle on 34th Street. But it's going to be starring your favorite WGN radio host. I get to play Macy.
Oh, Mr. Macy. Mr. Macy.
Wendy's got a big part in it. She's all over. She's got the... Yes. I was like, oh,
there's been research going on. We watched the 1947 film last weekend.
All right. There you go. So that's going to be on Friday, December 18th from 10 to noon, sponsored by Lou Malnati's. There's one available, 312-981-7200. Call in, give us your best question for Star Wars or anecdote, and I'll give you those tickets.
I love the tribute to Jerry Wells, too, because...
I know, right?
In, you know, the decades I've been working in radio, I can't think of many people who rank up with the quality of person that woman is. And she was like... an older sister to me when I was first starting in radio, and she's just one of the best.
That's
of the
great,
best.
Man. I just met her a couple months ago, and I could see the love. I mean, everyone loves her, and she's been great to me, so that's awesome that she gets a radio play named after her. All right, let's talk Star Wars. So, one of the things you said at the end there was about, you know, you wanted to celebrate this with your family.
Yes.
And we kind of talk about this when we started about who's this movie for? You have this, I have an 8-year-old who loves Star Wars because they just push Star Wars. I mean, the Star Wars is right up his alley when it comes to comic books and mm-hmm. Marvel and DC and Star Wars, right? But in this case, you know, SNL kind of poked fun at the idea that the 40-year-old fans who won't take the toys out of the package. But who's this movie for? Is this more for the fans? The 40-year-old fans who have been a part of this franchise, or is this for kids?
Well, I think this is for the fan of the original trilogy from the 70s. And even let's boil it down to the original Star Wars film from 1977. I think that this film is for anyone who enjoyed those classic movies. And so, yes, it is for the fan. And maybe it will have all of the elements that attracted all ages to Star Wars mm-hmm. when it first debuted in 1977, because let's face it, it was a pop culture phenomenon. No one had ever seen anything like Star Wars when it hit the silver screens in 1977. And I think that the impact of it in its time appealed across the board to young and old.
Right.
And so I think that is what's going on here, is recapturing that magic, the original vibe and feels that you got from that classic Star Wars film.
Right.
And so, yes, it is for the fans.
Did they vary from that with the prequels? Because that's what they kind of bash the prequels for, not really honoring the vibe, quote-unquote vibe, from the 70s movies.
Well, it was George Lucas's creation, and he decided to expand the mythology and develop the story, the backstory that had always been running through his head. However, when he did it, he wanted to create a story that would push the boundaries of the technical end of filmmaking.
Ah, I see.
And I think that by doing so, he created different worlds and different aesthetics and really, really pushed the envelope as far as that goes.
That's interesting, yeah.
He took great risks because he did something different. Now, the harshest critics of the prequels, and by the way, I'll clarify, I am a fan of the prequels. I devote, you know, a lot of my time to doing a Star Wars podcast, so obviously I like a lot of it. And I did like the prequels. I am an older fan who liked the prequels because I appreciated what Lucas was doing as far as pushing those boundaries.
Let me ask you this. As a fan, you guys do the best Star Wars podcast in the galaxy. What don't you like about the Star Wars mythology?
Wow.
What is it like? I mean, if you think about the movies, is there one thing where you're like, no, that's not for Jimmy Mack?
Not so much. No. I'm across the board out of the closet super fan. And I'll debate the merits of all things Star Wars. If there's anything that really bothers me that I'm not a fan of, is the harsh reaction to George Lucas as a result of the criticisms of the prequels, where people suddenly started shooting missiles at the guy who built these worlds, created these characters, right, developed the technology.
And didn't give him the space to do something new.
And then, yes, so when he did take that risk and when he did go in a different direction, people cried foul because people don't like change. And he changed things. He changed things. And a lot of the techniques that he developed in the prequels are definitely prevalent in filmmaking today. And it all came out of his wallet, too. He paid for that himself. So it wasn't
he didn't have any big corporate backers
or anything. It was him. The buck stopped there. So people have an individual target to shoot their criticisms at. And I think he had always been treated unfairly.
Well, let me take a call. And what I really want to do is after the break, after the news, I want to get to the culture of it because that was part of it. You're not going to see a ton of people dressing up like General Grievous tomorrow or Thursday. You know, you're not going to see a lot of Jar Jar Binks people dressing up. They'll still go back to the Stormtroopers and the Darth Vaders when they get ready for this movie.
Yes.
But let's talk a little bit about that culture. But let's take a call. Let's go to Kathy. Kathy, you're on the download.
Hi, how are you? Hi, Jimmy Mack.
Hey, Kathy.
Hey. So my question is, what did you think of the trailer that had Harrison Ford saying Chewie, we're home?
Wow.
Did you cry?
That's a good... See, she asked a really good question. Now, that was in April when that debuted, and it premiered in Anaheim at a convention, Star Wars Celebration. I was one of the hosts of three main stages, and we did screen the trailer in our room to about 1,500 people,
wow,
filling every seat.
Wow,
it's what kicked off the convention. There were 60,000 people at the convention itself over the course of the four-day weekend. But for the trailer, watching it and seeing Harrison Ford in that familiar environment, with Chewbacca standing next to him, but Harrison 30 years later with that line, Chewie, we're home. I was like, what? Did he say Chewie, we're old? What did he say? No, it was Chewie, we're home. And it was just, it numbed me.
Stunning.
Now, I promised at the end of that trailer, I would run around the auditorium and high five everyone I could and then jump back on the stage. Well, I did just that. But instead of running, it was just sort of a kind of slow walk that was sort of a daze, kind of I couldn't clear my head. And yes, I saw grown men crying in the audience. That's the sort of impact that moment had on some of the hardcore fans.
Kathy's call, Pete, Kathy's call got us to that great story of Jimmy telling us about grown men crying in an Anaheim conference room. So give Kathy the tickets if she wants
them. Big score.
Big score. Yeah. Jimmy Mack, Rebel Force Radio here on WGN Plus, the number one Star Wars podcast in the galaxy. Let's take a break so we can stay on target. That was very Star Wars.
Stay on target. Sweet.
And we get to the news with Martyr. But when we come back, I want to talk about that culture. And then I also want to talk about the vast Star Wars community, because it's not just about the culture, but it's also about all the, like, I lose it when it gets to the spinoffs and the TV shows and the, like you said, the novelization, graphic novels. I lose Lego. Like, I have no concept of what's real and what's not and what's, like, in the Star Wars lore. So we got the guy here, Jimmy Mack. We'll talk to him here on The Download. Stay with us. Kate, you're getting all of them in. That's it, right? That's the three? Where do you know, Jimmy, where this music's from in the movie?
Yeah, this is from Empire Strikes Back. This is sort of the romantic theme for Han and Leia.
Oh, I got it. Don't get frozen. I know. I love you. I love you. No, I don't know.
Listen, so majestic.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. Yeah. Yeah, that's the famed I love you, I know. Right? Isn't that the right around there? See, I can play this game. I'm close.
You know,
close.
Yeah, toward right. the end of the Towards film. The end. Yes, right. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Jimmy Mack from Rebel Force Radio, WGN Plus podcast, the number one Star Wars podcast in the galaxy. In studio with us, a big week. The world premiere probably still going on here, but getting close to wrapping up. The first eyeballs on this film. Tomorrow's the press screenings, one here in Chicago.
Yes.
And then I guess Thursday is the opening, Wednesday night, Thursday night?
Thursday night, opening night.
Okay.
And the first screenings will start happening at 7 p.m. and then run through the evening. Gone are the days of the old midnight releases.
Really?
Yeah, you don't see that so much anymore.
You would now think this would be the reason to bring that back.
Yeah, they kind of sweep the evening from like 7, 9, 10, then a midnight. But back in the old days, you just crammed the movie theater for that midnight release. That would be when it would launch.
Right, right.
But, you know, just a warning to fans that the media embargo on reviews is going to be lifted at 2 a.m. on Wednesday morning. So if you are trying to avoid all spoilers at all costs,
that's where it's going to be.
Really watch out for Wednesday.
So let me ask you this. You know, one of the great things about Star Wars, and it really is, you don't see it in a lot of other movies, is the culture surrounding going to the theater.
Yes.
They really develop that, and you dress up in a different character, and it becomes almost like its own Comic-Con. Star Wars convention at the theater. Where does this come from? Why did this movie of all movies sort of grab that attention, make that part of its thing?
Well, I mean, gosh, the love that fans have for this universe, they want to, when you talk about costuming, which is something I don't necessarily take
You're not
going to
dress up.
I've never dressed up as a Star Wars character in my life.
I could
life,
see you playing like a Neum Num. You could be a...
That's a quote.
That was a quote.
That's a quote from the film. You can look it up.
We can make it. That was
you can Google it. You can Google it.
Yeah, so you're not a dress up guy.
I don't dress up. I love the self-expression that the fans have. I love the fact that they're putting their passion out there and saying it loud and saying it proud. And I love the atmosphere that a bunch of stormtroopers bring to any event. Right. But it comes from a place because when you were a kid watching those films, you wanted to be patrolling the Death Star in that white stormtrooper armor. And so leave it to the fans. They develop a whole culture around it. They create these costuming groups that go out to hospitals, and they do a lot of charity work. And they've been recognized by Lucasfilm for their efforts. The 501st is what I'm talking about. That's the costuming group. Also, there's one called the Rebel Legion. They just do a lot for the fan community. The reason why Star Wars fans get so interactive with it is, I think, just because it sparks that creative urge in you, and it makes you want to be very expressive about what you're experiencing as someone who's consuming a piece of pop culture.
Right.
It hits you at that core level, and it affects different people in different ways. Now, me, obviously, I podcast, because what podcasting does is it combines my two big passions, radio and Star Wars. I have a lot of friends in the film industry solely because they were inspired by seeing Star Wars for the first time. So it affects your creative level on a certain degree. And it's really nice to see people who go that extra mile and they create those costumes, and they go to the hospitals, and they cheer up the kids and everything.
It's amazing to me because they're, you know, I could see that in 1977, 1981, there's not as much competition for universes, for creating mythology, you know. But along comes so many other franchises. Mm-hmm. I think of Lord of the Rings, maybe. I mean, Star Trek was before that, but the movies of Next Generation. But it just seems to me, even here in 2015, there's a lot more competition.
Yes.
For fandom, for I guess I don't want fanaticism, but just the idea that there are more options for people to sink their teeth in, but they still come back to Star Wars.
I liken fan passion for Star Wars to fan passion for a sporting franchise, you know, like the Hawks, okay? People, they essentially, they go in costume to the game.
You're right.
We all put on our red sweaters. Mine says Hosa. And we go to the games. And that's how we say it loud and say it proud. You know, we wear our passions on our sleeves. And Star Wars fans are very similar in that regard, to where it's almost like that sort of passion, supporting your local sports franchise. And we liken Rebel Force Radio to sports talk radio in many ways, because we're all talking the same language that everyone understands. We don't have to dumb it down for our listeners. We know who our audience is, and we know that we're all speaking the same language and on the same level playing field. Listen to sports talk.
Yeah.
Okay. Every little bit of my piece of minutia from any sporting event is discussed, and it's discussed in detail, and it's discussed technically, and it assumes the listener knows what's being spoken about. And if you listen on to WGN on Sundays after the Bears game, you will hear Mr. Obradovich getting very passionate.
Replace Jay Cutler with Darth Vader, and now you see.
And so, but you get that thing that just boils up inside of you, and it requires a release. And I think that's what Star Wars fans, that's how they respond.
You know, it's interesting to me, because, you know, there's so much Star Wars media right now, just because this movie's coming out. We've seen it. We talked about the nonstop conventions and releases of the trailer. For you, I mean, you've been doing this podcast for 10 plus years. There are times, and a lot of the times, where there were no Star Wars movies.
Yes.
You were like in the Star Wars drought, or the time when nothing was happening, yet you still were, you know, putting out this podcast on the regular. So what was the passion at that time? I mean, to do a Star Wars podcast when there is no Star Wars product?
Well, since it was no clear direction into where the franchise was going, it almost seems like George Lucas had retired the story and was not going to go
forward.
There
was a thought, right? There was a thought that that might be it.
Yeah. And so there was a 3-year period of nothing. And so we filled the void as best we could, because we felt it was sort of on us to keep the flame alive in hopes that he'll rekindle things and start making new films. Now, what he focused on was an animated show, which we got behind and were very strong supporters of. And during that process, we were networking and got the opportunity to work pretty closely with Lucasfilm and bring fans up to speed with this show. So by the time that it finished its 6th and final season, the fan base was massive. The show was winning Emmys, and people didn't want it to end, but it was time to move forward into a new direction. The show is, of course, Star Wars, The Clone Wars, and that helped fill the void for us. But we did feel like it was our responsibility to keep the flame alive, to keep people talking about Star Wars. Something that really impacted me and actually helped me get involved in the podcast in the first place was an event in 2007 in LA to celebrate the 30th anniversary of Star Wars, Star Wars Celebration 4. And it was because of that event, and also with the rise of a new medium, podcasting, that I got involved with Star Wars, because I had heard who would be my future podcasting partner, Jason Swank, hosting another show. And as a result of wanting to know people at this convention in LA, I reached out to him and said, hey, I really like what you're doing. I think I can help. And I just got on board as a sort of a producer. And I did a lot of production for the show, and we built it up to a thing.
What year
where,
would this been, like the
this
late
2000, 90s? Late 2006.
Oh, 2006.
Okay. Yeah. And that's when we were working on the original podcast called The Force Cast. And that was conceived and hosted by Jason and another guy named Pete Nadel out in Canton, Ohio. And I hooked up with those guys, and then Pete Nadel stepped down. And during that time, I was co-hosting time to time. I was hosting my own shows. And just one thing led to another, where I slid into the co-host seat permanently. And we just took it independent in 2013. And it's just grown into a machine.
Rebel Force Radio, of course. Jimmy Mack is here. He's one of the co-hosts. When we come back, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap it up, and we'll talk about what festivities you're involved with this week, but also just, you know, sort of get your last thoughts on what it means to be at Star Wars Premiere Week here in 2015.
Wow. Finally.
Stay with us. Should we do some role play? Han, don't leave.
Now, this is new music, I believe. Yeah.
You're good, man.
This is new. This is from the trailer, the first main trailer.
Chewie.
No, not that one.
No, this is a different one.
The one that debuted during Monday Night Football about 6 weeks ago.
Now, I love it. Jimmy Mack, Rebel Force Radio, WGN Plus podcast, the number one Star Wars podcast in the galaxy.
Yes.
Jimmy... Yeah, I'm not that familiar, and Pete and I were talking about we're not familiar, but this is just the beginning of a new wave of nonstop Star Wars. We're going to get this movie, and which, I mean, because, you know, the reality of the fact is that, you know, in a month's time, this movie will have a couple people in the theater and then getting ready for DVD release, and all of this three-year-long hype to this movie will be over.
Yeah, that's how the cycle works.
But... there are a lot of Star Wars movies in production.
There are a lot of Star Wars movies. Obviously, this film that opens this upcoming Friday, Star Wars The Force Awakens, is the first of the sequel trilogy. So we're going to be getting episodes 8 and 9 as they fall into the chronology. This will be known as Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. So the following two will feature more Luke Skywalker, perhaps more Carrie Fisher's Princess Leia. Don't know about Harrison Ford. it's all shrouded in secrecy. But what's interesting is there's going to be standalone films, too, in the years in between the trilogy.
So it'll be like, it's almost like Marvel, where there's like Avenger movie every 2 years, but there's something in the middle, like the Ant-Man comes out, the whatever,
And like how Disney owns Lucasfilm, they also own Marvel. So certain bits of the Marvel release template is being applied here to Star Wars. And what's interesting is in between every 2 years is when you're going to see these episodic chapters of the trilogy. The in-between years will feature standalone films. This time next year, 2016, we'll be seeing the release of Star Wars Rogue One, which is a standalone film, which will be kind of a gritty war film about the rebel spies who stole the plans to the original Death Star, thus setting up the events of 1977 Star Wars.
So it's a prequel somewhere in there. It's
something like that. I'm sure they want to shy away from
the term prequel.
Right. But it promises to be a pretty interesting film. It's going to be starring Forrest Whitaker and just a great cast. And it's probably going to be a little bit more of a gritty Star Wars.
So we're going to see Star Wars every year for the next...
Yes.
7-8 years. Is there any concern about overkill or backlash or the idea that it's just too much? I mean, I kind of got that feeling even with Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, where you're like, all right, enough. Why make it one movie?
Right.
Is there any fear from Disney, from Star Wars, from Star Wars community that it's just too much Star Wars?
Well, I don't think from the from Disney or the Star Wars community. I mean, we are the audience for this stuff, so obviously the hardcore fans are eating it up. I just wonder about just the regular person who turns on TV and sees Star Wars popping up everywhere. It's bound to attract your attention at the very least. Does it irritate you? Do you suffer from overkill when it comes to Star Wars? My God, I could probably lay down on a psychologist's couch and have a conversation about this for 2 hours, and we still won't come to the conclusion. The bottom line is, for a guy like me,
you're
cannot be a barometer at all.
Well, that's Pete.
But maybe.
Pete, are you going to be sick of Star Wars after 7 years? Straight up every year doing this?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Pete, I don't think anything is going to compare to the hype that we're seeing now.
So
because
this is
the
return.
This is the big return. This is Disney unveiling the next chapter of the Star Wars saga,
right
under their umbrella.
I'm not even a Star Wars fan per se, but I'm very excited, and I think it's a connection to my childhood. But I'm excited because it is they've drawn me in with the hype. For you, this is a big week for you and for Rebel Force Radio.
Yes.
What do you guys have on tap? You talked about earlier. You're going out. You're doing the premiere. You're live remote from
live remote
Woodridge.
Hollywood Boulevard Cinemas in Woodridge, Illinois. We'll be there from 6 to 8 p.m. doing a live remote Rebel Force Radio. We will be streaming live. So for details on that, go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Rebel Force Radio. We have an official website that we're still trying to build and release. We're very close.
It's kind of like the Death Star.
Hard to believe, you know, Rebel Force Radio has been in existence for 3 years now, and we've never really had an official website. That just goes to show you the power of the podcast.
Yeah, right. You don't need it.
You don't need it.
You don't need it. I don't want to give you free marketing advice, but you don't need it.
But we're really excited about the new website, so there'll be all kind of cool things happening there.
And what else you got? You're working on other podcasts as well?
Wow, we recorded a show today. I'm really good friends with a Hollywood film director, a guy named Kyle Newman. He directed a film which was essentially a love letter to Star Wars, a comedy called Fanboys.
Oh, yeah.
So you catch that on TV every once in a while, and you could get it on DVD and Blu-ray. But we met through Star Wars, and Kyle is he's very connected out in L.A. with the entertainment industry, and he was approached by a website called Howl FM to do a podcast, and he came up with this idea called The Franchise. And what we're going to be doing is talking about various film franchises.
Okay.
Through multiple episodes, and of course, we're starting with Star Wars. It's what everyone's talking about. So we recorded the first show today. I'm producing the show, along with a guy named Razzle Dangerously, who is a podcaster on Nerdist and Howl FM. And of course, Kyle Newman is sort of the moderator of the whole thing. But in addition to me, we have Kyle's wife, who is a supermodel slash actress named Jamie King, who was on the old CW show Heart of Dixie, and she can be seen on magazine covers everywhere. We also have Topher Grace from That 70s Show.
Sure.
Eric Foreman, he's a huge Star Wars fan.
That's great.
And F.J. DeSanto, who is a producer on the Transformers animated show, and one of my very good friends, Paul Bateman, who is a professional filmmaker in London and a concept artist and someone who...
Well, where can we find it? When's it going to be out?
It's going to be out on Wednesday on Howl FM. It's called The Franchise.
Look it up. Jimmy Mack, Rebel Force Radio, the big week, Star Wars here. I guess I say congratulations.
Congratulations. We made it, finally, without completely imploding.
Yeah. Jimmy, thank you so much for being here and talking Star Wars.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's going to do it tonight. Thanks to Pete Zimmerman. Patty Vasquez coming up pretty late with Patty Vasquez. Music Monday. You see the microphones getting set up now. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. Blackhawks are on tonight. Tomorrow night. We will be back on Wednesday night and download with more about Chicago starring those who live here.